would like you all to have a seat. I see a few of these yellow forms to address the board. Only four have arrived at the podium here. If you do wish to address the board, it really is helpful if you do
fill out a yellow form. And Mrs. Holmes
will collect those from you, and I see more and more coming in.
We are in session, and I think we'll soon get Mr. Unger up here. Okay. Let's start with the consensus on the order of business here. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? We have a quorum, and everybody's nodding, so we do. So we'll continue from there. We are going to take action on the stipulated student discipline agreement.
I move approval of the stipulated student discipline agreement.
Second. A second. So we have a motion for approval of the stipulated agreement by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Millar. Okay. And all of those in favor say aye. I want to note that both Mrs. Roger and Mrs. Rogers, Dr. Catherine S. Eisendrath Rogers, are absent at this point. Motion carry. Mrs. Marilyn Roger will be just temporary. So anyway, the motion carries 5-0. All right. We need approval of the minutes from the April the 22nd meeting.
I'll move approval of the April 22nd meeting.
I'll
second. We had a motion by Mr. Millar for approval and a second by
Mark.
By Mark. And is there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Okay. Seeing none, let's all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, and we have two absent. All right, we're going to move on to student representatives to the board, and I'm looking around, and I don't see them. So we'll move from there to the, looks like item 5.02, which would be the introduction of new principals.
Good evening, board. I'd like to set the stage tonight. This is a night of celebration, where we're going to acknowledge our employees of the year. But before we start, I'd like to begin by introducing three new members to our leadership team. And just as you know, this year we've had two retirements that will begin next year at Monarch Grove for Dr. Jim Skoulis and at Los Ranchos for Mrs. Mary Lou Gooden. And as well, we have right here. Joyce has had a long and successful career as an educator. She was highly regarded and successful as a classroom teacher. She then pursued instructional coaching in our district and did that so well that she caught our entire team's attention. She's just an amazing educator, and so she was able to step in at C.L. Smith mid-year, right around December. And I have to tell you, in speaking with the staff and reaching out to the parent community and then talking to her peers, they showered praise on her. And it was an easy decision. Mrs. Joyce Hansen, C.L. Smith principal. I'd like to introduce our newest principal at Monarch Grove Elementary. She is a resident of Los Osos. She has two young children, not quite school age, but soon to be. And she's also a former Teacher of the Year in Lucia Marr School District. Okay, I'm going to hold my grin. Okay, I really am. And then she moved on as an incredible educator in Lucia Marr, and she became principal at Fair Grove Elementary School, which is a Title I elementary school with great challenges. But she, by all whom I've asked and inquired with regarding Mrs. Storm, they have basically referred to her as the instructional leader of not just the site, but within the district as well. She's just an exceptional person. When you come to know her, you can't help but appreciate her and like her. Her enthusiasm is infectious. And I'd like to introduce Lara Storm as our new principal at Monarch Grove Elementary. So it's not easy replacing a principal who's been on board at Los Ranchos for 12 years and is very highly regarded within her staff and community. And so we sought to find the right fit for Los Ranchos Elementary, which was no easy task. And so as the candidates came in and as we processed and really examined who the best fit would be, again, I inquired with colleagues, with people. While becoming an instructional coach, she also immediately became one of the strongest leaders, instructional leaders in our district. And when I watched her in her interviews, when I listened to what people had to say about her, it was absolutely impressive. When she sat in the final interview in my office, I just sat there and I welled up. You know, she's just got a love for kids and a love for her practice and a regard for education in general that I could not pass up on. So our newest leader for Los Ranchos Elementary is Mrs. Marley Schmidt.
Thank you very much, Dr. Prater. Thank you, new principals. Welcome aboard. We are now at the item 5.30, the recognition of teacher, administrator, and classified employees of the year. And Kristen Newland is going to take care of that for us, correct?
Thank you very much. It's my great pleasure to introduce all of these wonderful people to you. And I have been told that we need to have a picture and we have certificates. So Rick is going to be in charge of the photos with this pink camera. And so, I was given very specific instructions by Debbie that Jim is going to hand these out at the end, and we're going to get a photo. Rick is going to get a photo of you, Jim, handing these to the winners. So I need all of you to come in front here so they can shake all of your hands, and then at the end, Jim, you'll be over here on the side. It's a little orchestrated. Yes. So the new principals, they would like you to start with the handshake. So you can just saying hi. Okay, wait, turn around and smile.
Good.
Okay, thank you. That was great modeling. Okay. Our first employee that we would like to recognize is actually not here tonight, and that is Sharon Bloom, who received the School Support Employee, Classified Employee of the Year for Fiscal Services and Accounting. So Sharon is described as always helpful, patient, and pleasant. She has quickly developed a high level of expertise in her position in fiscal services and is able to assist secretaries with any accounting question we have. She is able to unravel even the most complicated of accounting balance and transaction questions and has made great strides in making the budget reporting, budget transfers, QSS program, and other fiscal matters user-friendly and much easier for school site staff. Sharon is also incredibly helpful to the secretaries and clerks who are generating attendance reports and has a high level of both patience and expertise when numbers from PowerSchool don't balance on the reports. She has made the path to navigating independent study reporting clear and helps us complete all of the related reports correctly. In her various positions she has occupied in the district, she has been promoted to her present position, and wherever she has been, she has made the position approachable, easy to work with, and easier for others working around her. We wish we could clone her. So Sharon is not here tonight. Next, if I could have Terry Fossmeyer come up here. Is Terry here? So I'm going to read a little bit about Terry before she comes and shakes your hands. Terry Fossmeyer has amazing compassion and empathy. Having raised a special needs child herself as a single parent, she has an incredible amount of compassion for children, especially those who need a little extra TLC. Unfazed even by challenging behaviors, she makes these children her special helpers and finds tasks for them to help to boost their self-esteem. In areas where district resources fall short, Terry works closely with parent and student volunteers to fill in the gaps in order to keep our campus courtyard and gardens weed-free and full of flowers. She works with the PTA to find funding to buy plants and ground cover. On several occasions, she has even organized crews of volunteer firefighters to do brush cleanup on the campus perimeter. Our schools are thriving under Terry's remarkable initiative and energy. She is the most extraordinary custodian we have ever worked with. Our school is squeaky clean with even carpets and windows regularly cleaned. Her work ethic is an inspiration to all of us, and she always makes us feel that even the smallest request for a classroom takes priority over any other project she's working on. Terry is very proactive in offering help and anticipating needs. She keeps a close eye on the school calendar to make sure facilities and setups are in place for assemblies and special events. With two schools and all of their events on one campus, she has kept hopping. Terry handles it all with her upbeat personality, calm efficiency, and flawless work ethic. Our school is thriving under Terry's caring hands. She is an outstanding custodian and an amazing person. Congratulations. Congratulations, Terry. The next person we'd like to recognize in the area of administrator management is Rick Manderscheid.
Now you have to stand here while I talk about you.
This is written by Anthony Palazzo, his new director. While I've only worked with Rick for 2 months at the district, I've worked with him in previous districts in various capacities. In the 10-plus years I've worked with Rick, I have found him to be a dedicated, conscientious, and logical thinking member of the team. In all cases, he has always put the team mission first and his own needs second. Rick will be retiring this year, and most staff I speak with ask, "How will you replace Rick?" To which I answer, "I don't know." His quick response to issues, logical solutions, and countless long days, all of which happen in the background, keep the maintenance of the district's facilities appear asked to manage. Within a few weeks, he asked a few questions of other agencies and developed a plan to purchase the equipment, train in-house staff to perform these tasks, and get the process started. The end result is expected to save the district roughly $50,000 per year. Allow our staff... Allow our staff to expand their skills and provide a valuable service to the district. On a personal level, Rick has an even-keeled demeanor, a great rapport with his staff, and works well with the others in the office. I have yet to hear anyone ever have a negative thing to say about Rick. I think if you ask around, you will find that is universal. In closing, for his years of selfless service, I cannot emphasize how deserving Rick is of this award as he prepares for retirement.
Thank you very much.
Lastly, our committee was charged with selecting one overall winner that will be going to the CSBA dinner to recognize a classified employee of the year. And that winner was in the area of clerical, and that is Pamela C. This was written and signed by everybody here at Morro Bay, and written by Kathy Bueller and Cindy Varney. So, no one is more cherished in this world than someone who lightens the burden of another. It is an extreme honor for me to recommend Pamela C. for recognition as Clerical Employee of the Year. Pam is the Senior Secretary Clerk at Morro Bay High School, working as the Secretary for the Assistant Principal. But that is just a job title. Pam is so much more. She makes the work of everyone at Morro Bay High School easier by the initiative she takes to help everyone. Simply put, she makes all of our lives and jobs easier, and because of that, we are all better at our jobs. I could list all the duties of her position and tell you that she performs all of them impeccably. Or stay late to wrap up testing or take a parent to Pirate Plaza, Pam does these tasks with a smile on her face and a terrific attitude. Yes, Pam performs all these duties of her position with ease and grace. She is an exceptional employee who goes above and beyond every day. Her organizational skills are impeccable. She organizes our yearly Casey breakfast each March, feeding approximately 225 students each of the 2 mornings prior to testing. She is also an integral part of the organization of this year's SBAC testing, making the transition from STAR to SBAC testing as smooth as possible. Pam is a fabulous communicator. Whether she is speaking with staff, parents, or students, she treats everyone with respect and dignity. She is able to juggle work between several departments, including the attendance office, counseling, and the main office, while never missing a deadline. Because of her attention to detail, Pam's work is always accurate and neat. Pam is a problem solver. When she sees something that needs to be done, she takes care of it right away. More than that, she's able to solve problems and conflicts in such a way that all parties are happy. I've observed Pam resolve conflicts with facilities, scheduling in a matter of minutes, contacting all parties involved and working with them to find a way to reschedule or reserve another venue. In each instance, all parties were happy with the resolution. Pam is beloved by the staff, students, and parents. She has a way of making everyone feel special and important. She is one of the go-to people in the office. If an administrator is not available, staff will talk with Pam, and the majority of the time she's able to solve their problem. She's kind, compassionate, confident, and caring. The essence of Pam is pure. She's about serving others. Pam believes that everyone has value and is important. There's no pretense or hidden agenda with Pam. Because of this, she has developed tremendous rapport with our students and staff, always finds time to help them when needed, whether it be helping students with a lost login for PowerSchool, collecting their AP money, or filling out lunch forms, or working with the teacher on organizing our yearly PE fitness testing, answering testing questions, or helping them with field trip forms. Pam is always the one to jump up and get the job done. But her commitment goes beyond taking care of the immediate problem. She sees the big picture and understands how one step here, one bit of assistance, can lead to a fuller, happier, more fulfilling life for those we're charged with educating. For example, earlier this year, one of our special education students wanted to be an office aide and was having difficulty finding an office to work in. Working with special education students can be challenging, and while some might have seen only the challenges faced with that, Pam saw an opportunity. She immediately recognized how much the student would gain in the areas of job and social skill development if they were provided the opportunity to serve as an office aide. Pam took the student under her wing, knowing that he would require patience and understanding when learning tasks, and that many of the tasks he would encounter as an office aide would be new for him. The transformation is a sight to behold. I have witnessed Pam develop a unique no more. Pam has developed excellent relationships with the community and works closely with other community organizations such as Women Aid and Assistance League. She does so because she truly believes in the importance of helping those in need. When Pam tells you a story, you can see the joy and general sense of fulfillment that comes from making a difference in someone's life. Dr. King once said, "Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others?" Pam answers that question every day in every interaction she has with staff, students, parents, and the community. She is quietly affecting them positively. There's no greater gift, no greater fear than to touch someone positively, expecting nothing in return. Thank you, Pam. Truly an honor. And next, we'd like to recognize the site teachers of the year. So like the principals who filed through, we're not going to talk about each one of you, but we'd like to you to come up and be recognized and shake everybody's hand. So I'd like to recognize first Mike Gilmore from Morro Bay High School. Next, I'd like to recognize Kathy Greer from Los Ranchos Elementary School. Next, I'd like to recognize Dan Hoskins from Los Osos Middle School. Next, I'd like to recognize Kathy Kirby from Monarch Grove Elementary School. Lastly, I'd like to honor, out of all those selections, we had one teacher that just really shined, and we had wonderful applications, as you can imagine, but I'd like to bring up here Raleigh Regier. So Raleigh exemplifies the characteristics of the lifelong learner. She is open to new ideas, curriculum, and above all, new learning. She is a consummate professional in her field. Raleigh attends many workshops to hone her teaching skills so that she can provide the best for her students and families. In the areas of reading and math, Raleigh has been diligent and committed not only in understanding our professional standards as they apply to special ed, but in taking on the Common Core State standards. She's taken it upon herself to learn new curricular units, partner with District TOSAs, learn from site colleagues, and attend district office professional development to better her skills on the Common Core. She is never afraid to ask if she is meeting her professional standards for teachers and students, and consistently goes out of her way to improve her teaching and professionalism. She is an example for all teachers in this time of change of how to lead the way in the world of standards. Above all else, Raleigh values her students and parents and the education they deserve. Because of this, the most challenging students are able to bond with her and excel in ways they would not if it were not for her care. Raleigh's parents respect her honesty, her supportive affect, her desire to create a model of success for their students, and her tireless efforts to advocate on their behalf. Raleigh's colleagues are awed by her dedication to her students and our school community. Co-workers appreciate Raleigh's willingness to be a team player, do more than is generally expected, and to make working at LAMS a wonderful experience. Raleigh's sense of humor helps relieve the daily tensions that abound in special education. She always makes time to collaborate and to support her colleagues in a sincere manner. Raleigh gives in every way she can, even though her personal life is filled to the brim. She puts LAMS and our community above her personal needs. This shows through supporting registration, attending extracurricular events, and consciously attending supervision. She offers a hand wherever it's needed and never fails to be there for our school. Her role is highly useful as she attends to students with IEPs and ensures their success through the transition to increasingly challenging classes. Raleigh presents a non-confrontational style and always looks for the path that will lead to peaceful outcomes where all parties can feel respected and valued. Raleigh is truly upbeat, composed, and assured in her communication style. Her calm, lighthearted demeanor puts students and parents at ease so they can clearly hear her message during instruction and in meetings. When presenting testing results, she explains her findings in a way that is well received by parents and colleagues alike. Raleigh's passion is working with people. She truly and deeply respects students from all levels and all backgrounds and shows this in her work as a special education teacher. Raleigh creates rapport with her students and inspires them to pursue higher goals and achieve in areas that might not be expected. Her encouragement is unfailing, even in the face of great behavioral or familiar changes, challenges that might be faced by her students. Raleigh demonstrates daily that teaching is truly her calling in life. Raleigh exhibits respect for all students, regardless of their ability levels and backgrounds. She has an uncanny knack for making students feel important and empowered, which greatly enhances their want and ability to learn. Congratulations. So we're going to take a brief recess for snacks to honor all, is that right? All of our award winners. Thank you, everybody, for showing up to support. And thank you to Val for the wonderful dessert we're about to have.
So I'll get Ellen. Ellen, you want to sign that right there, and then
Elise, how are you?
Yeah, let's see. Get Walter.
Game over. Mr. Buckman, on your way over, will you get Mr. Unger?
Chris is there. Okay. Yeah, just have it signed.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to ask all of you to sit down, please. And come to order and for those of you unfamiliar with the expression of "I'm using teacher silence," thank you. Just a quick note on the cake situation. There appears to be more cake in case anyone. At item 6.01, the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, I'm going to be really brief because we have a lot on the agenda. Our focus really has, in my department anyways, has been on developing, working side by side with instructional services on getting the LCAP together. It's a little different process this year because of the new laws surrounding LCAP and LCFF that we do kind of the public hearing, budget public hearing at our next May 20th meeting, and then the actual approval will come to the board in the June meeting. So that's a little change than what has happened in the past. Julie Lang and her team is putting together the 14-15 budget, going through everything, and so it's been... This is the first time I will have gone through that process with them, and so it's been pretty enlightening for me to do it and go through it, and we look forward to bringing that forward to you on May 20th.
Thank you. That was very brief. We are now to the educational services update, the counseling support model.
Thank you very much. At the last couple of board meetings, several public comments and concerns have been voiced about the counseling services in San Luis Coastal. We appreciate the feedback regarding the support programs that we offer and would like to briefly describe what we've accomplished this year and some of our plans for the future. It's well known that last year we had to reduce counselors at our elementary and secondary schools due to broad-ranging budget cuts. This year, our focus with the counseling group has been to redefine the duties for this group of professionals. Chris Dowler, Deputy Director of Student Support Services, has been working with our counselors throughout the year to complete this process. Chris has some information for you regarding the services we are currently able to provide. We'll explain a vision for expanded support through a tiered intervention model, and we'll describe the work we still have to do. I think that it's important to have this conversation this evening. With the LCAP budget being presented for the first time, a process that requires district and community feedback, the opportunity is perfect to explore what we have to offer our students.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm wearing my tie. All right, moving on to the next slide. It is difficult to measure student social-emotional well-being in schools. However, to measure our efforts at improving student well-being and engagement, we typically look at school attendance, student discipline, and graduation rates. For attendance, all of our critical indicators have improved. You can see from 68 to 42 this year at the elementary level and 214 to 211 at the secondary level. Finally, with graduation rates, our schools perform significantly better than the state average and even better than our three other large districts in our county. 96.5%, which is a cohort graduation rate. It's interesting, this, you can measure graduation rates in different ways. You can measure the number of seniors that start and the number of seniors that graduate. This is a state's cohort graduation rate. So every ninth grader that enters one of our high schools, they measure no matter where they move to, wherever they go, if they're expelled, whether they go to Pacific Beach. Those graduation rates are attached to our district and our secondary schools. Next one. Regardless of these successes, we need to continue refining and improving our district-wide practices. The best research-based model for supporting students' social, emotional, and behavioral needs is the Positive Behavioral Intervention Model, PBIS. This model emphasizes organizing student supports and systems into an integrated continuum in which students receive services based on their response to targeted tiered interventions with the goal of improving student attendance, behavior, and achievement. What this diagram represents is a district-wide implementation of a PBIS model for supporting student needs in San Luis Coastal Schools. In this model, our school counselors work with a large number of students providing Tier 2 supports, such as group and individual counseling. It is important to note, though, that school counselors are not therapists, and therapists are not school counselors. As such, their roles are distinct. Contracted therapists in Tier 3 work with far less students but provide a critical intervention when students are not responding to Tier 2 programs and require extensive therapeutic counseling that school counselors are not able to provide. Free, on-campus therapeutic counseling is essential to assist students who are not able to access private counseling due to family circumstances. This model, particularly our Tier 1 category, needs some work, but the more intensive levels can be made operational with the staffing outline in my following slides. Wow, you really can't see that from here. Is it just me? Okay. To better support the needs of students, we are proposing adding a 0.6 school counselor to help support student needs at Sinsheimer and Teach next school year. Also, in response to varying site needs, we have added nearly 4 days a week of therapeutic counseling support through expanding our contracts with partners. Every highlighted item is a level of some sort of addition. Okay, thanks. Secondary counseling supports will expand the use of the Student Assistance PEI program currently used at Los Osos Middle School in partnership with County Behavioral Health to the Laguna and Pacific Beach campuses. This program joins the efforts of a school counselor, site administration, a family advocate, and a therapist to help improve student attendance and behavior. If successful, we hope these programs will be brought to our two high school campuses in following years. So similar to the previous slide, which was elementary, the secondary slide, the left-hand column is this year's, and the next year's is in the right-hand column. Ultimately, we are working to refine and streamline the role of school site counselors to become more efficient in providing service and support to students. I've worked collaboratively with our counselors for the past year to help accomplish 4 main tasks. 1, define the roles of counselors in our district. 2, define the functions that in which they carry out these goals. And 3, measure their outcomes of their efforts. And 4th, analyze these results to refine their practices. For example, we know this year that counselors at some of our secondary schools have not been able to work individually with students as they have in the past. As a result of this, we are working with site administration to reduce or redistribute unnecessary tasks previously placed on counselors so they can dedicate more time to working directly with students. Another example of helping counselors improve efficiency would have come through our CRT process, where district administration listened to the concerns of secondary counselors regarding workload issues. As such, as part of our LCAP for next year, proposes adding a program specialist so program specialists can be the 504 site coordinators. This burden previously fell on the shoulders of site counselors. Due to increasing public demand for 504 evaluations and the intensifying legal importance of these accommodation plans, this could bring significant relief to our site counselors. So what this slide shows is basically some of the work that we've done to complete those 4 goals, and that we have work in progress to help with that. Okay. A large goal during the last 2 years has been to expand our collaborative relationships with community agencies. As such, we have been successful at entering into partnerships which expand our ability to support families and students. Two of the programs here I'd like to highlight are our relationship with the Food Bank of San Francisco. And lastly, I'd like to mention that this slide is a bit of perspective. What we have here are some ratios. The ratios show counselor to, for next year, the proposed counselor to student ratio throughout the county. As you can see, our counselor to student ratio is the best in the county. As such, I think our counseling ratios are very sufficient for the needs of our students in our school district. And moving forward into next year, especially if we take that, if we accept that 0.6 expansion in our elementary schools, I think we're very sufficient to meet the needs of our students throughout our district.
If I could just add a comment, you know, I started my career, as many of the board members know, in counseling and guidance, and supervised counseling programs, and have one of my master's degrees in marriage, family, child counseling, so I'm very familiar with, and this is a near and dear topic to me. And what I've come to believe is that we need to have systemic and systematic approaches to our counseling program. The kind of one-size-fits-all school counselor model is not used widely in the state, and for good reason. It just doesn't produce the results that a more comprehensive model of various types of supports can. And I think of kind of like the medical model. We used to, 100 years ago, we went to general practitioners for everything. We went to one medical doctor for all of our concerns. But we've learned that in prevention, intervention, treatment, that it takes a wide range of skill levels, some that are lower skilled and some that are higher skilled to deal with our medical needs. So we see health screeners and LVNs and nurses and physician's assistants. And we go to a general practitioner, I do, for many things. We have school counselors for many of our needs, but my general practitioner wouldn't do knee surgery on me. We go to a specialist or somebody that's trained specifically for those kinds of things. And then afterwards, we may see people that provide rehabilitation and therapy or support services or group support services. And that medical model of a wide range and a wide tier of interventions is what Mr. Dowler's describing. So in my mind, to just add school counselors indiscriminately, which I know is what some of the feedback we've heard is actually simple and that's elegant and it won't cause harm, but it's also not cost effective, and it's an indiscriminate way of dealing with a complex issue. And so I think that what the course we're on is the right course to be following. It's the course much of the state.
On matters of district interest, the board will listen but cannot engage in discussion or take action on items not listed on the agenda, although this is listed. The total time for public comment is limited to 20 minutes, and each speaker is limited to 3 minutes. So what we'd like you to do is, if we have a number of public comments, is to come forward and state your name and address the board. And those of you in the audience, if you agree, please indicate by raising your hand rather than applauding, because that takes a lot of time and it's a bit disruptive. But we welcome your input, and so we are now open for public comment. Question, Mr. Unger.
Yeah, just a point of clarification. Are we doing our general public comment here, which is in a different place on our agenda, or are we doing comment related to this topic and then go into public comment after correspondence?
There's a good point there, Mr. Unger. I'm entertaining this, and I agree. You've noticed that I've changed the agenda, and I didn't mean to do that. But with the concurrence of the board, we'll deal with the public correspondence after this public comment. Is that acceptable to everybody? Okay. So, Mrs. Jeffer?
We have two people who wish to speak on school counseling.
I actually did have some questions for Mr. Dowler.
Did I miss you?
I wasn't sure. What I was going to do is I was hoping that we'd hear from the public first about the counseling only, and then I'd ask questions of Mr. Dowler. That's what I was kind of thinking about this procedurally. So I can go either way. I could ask Mr. Dowler the questions now, or I can wait till after the public.
Mr. Dowler will respond after the public comment.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Unger.
Thank you. Sorry for the confusion.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Okay, I have just two people who wish to speak specifically on school counseling, and those are Rose Fowler and Debbie Jones. You'll have 3 minutes, and as soon as you start speaking, I'll start the timer.
My name is Rose Fowler, an elementary school counselor. I've been here before. I was here last year. And I just have a few things that I'd like to inform the board about. There's somebody that needs a family advocate. That's my job to help figure out who those people are, those that I also referred to the PIP aid from the kinder through third grade. My PPS credential and my bachelor's in psychology and my master's in school counseling gives me the skills, the training, and I've acquired the experience to be able to know who needs what and what's going to help each person. I do investigations of bullying reports, which has become kind of the buzzword for the state. It's a very popular topic for parents to call in and say, my child's being bullied. So that goes to the top of my list. The MFT intern does not deal with that topic. I do classroom lessons in regards to friendship and bullying and the difference between bullying and conflict. I talk about safety. I talk about relationship issues that they have with their friends. I talk about reports of people talking about their privates and girlfriends and boyfriends and kissing and things that are not a topic that the MFT is there to deal with every day, but gets everybody riled up and parents calling on the phone. I do assessments of students in a quick way to see what kind of services they do need. I've had to do assessments on 3 kids this year to see whether they were actually suicidal or not and what type of services needed to be put in place for them. My lessons include learning readiness. This year I've found that some of our younger students are coming in with not the skills to be able to learn. They don't know how to listen. They don't know how to focus. They don't know how to attend to the teacher. And I've been working with the first and second grade to try and build those skills on the students so they can actually access the academic curriculum that the teachers are trying to provide. I work with their emotional management, their anger, their anxiety reduction with all the new curriculum that comes. There are a lot of kids that are anxious about lots of different things. There's lots of divorce this year that kids are anxious about. I teach them their social skills and how to talk respectfully to their classmates and their teacher. There was a student that actually told the principal to shut up. That's not something that the MFT would handle, nor the family advocate. They need somebody on the ground every day to deal with those students. I'm just about finished. Relationships need to be formed with students. Trust needs to be built with students, and it's the power of those relationships that helps change the behavior of those students. That's not developed in one day a week. That's developed across time, over years, and over time. Thank you very much.
Bennett Laguna, this time period is getting more stressful for our youth as they haven't developed the emotional tools to deal with the increased exposure inherent in social media, the changes in drug culture, and the other difficulties in life. This is where our counselors are the experts in assisting them. With this year's cuts in counseling, our counselors are so busy dealing with students with severe mental health issues and getting them outside help, increased numbers of 504s and IEPs, and the legal paperwork to document everything. Because of this, those students with a normal problem of how to cope with heartbreak or issues at home or academic issues are being left undone. There is a huge gap where students who aren't waving a huge red flag saying, help me, are slipping through. In the past, our counselors had time to check grades of every student and touch base with those receiving Fs and then help them gain the skills they need to change and improve. Now I approach the counselors to ask about a student, and often it is, who? They're not on my radar. I'll have to see what's going on. But then there isn't the time for them to do this. It isn't from a lack of desire or skills, but just minutes in the day. We, as a district, are failing to help these students. We need our students emotionally present every day far more than we need the latest technological gadget. Part of that initiative that San Luis Coastal has adopted states a culture of care. We need to show all our students we care by giving them the services to them that are needed to help them succeed. That includes counseling. Without your head in the game to learn, it won't happen. Please increase the funding or at least continue it how it was last year for counseling at our schools, especially at the secondary level. Let's prevent those students from slipping through the cracks. Thank you.
Yes, it's fine to come in and comment. Just keep it to 3 minutes. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Bridget Bogus. I'm a teacher at San Luis High, and I am here to ask you to restore the counselors to former levels. I'm very concerned about the use of MFT interns as a substitute for our counselors. Personally, I feel that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. These generally are people that have completed the minimum number of school hours to begin their clinical hours. They do not have the experience to begin their one-to-one interface with our students. Their experience is going to be gained using our students. They are not supervised on-site. They are supervised off-site. I'm concerned that they may not have the training to deal with some of the students out of class to see them at that time, so students are losing academic time to see them generally. They have minimum knowledge of school processes and oftentimes not great knowledge of community resources. Often they're from outside the community. And I ask you a question. You, as the people that are charged with trusting and caring for our students, you're in charge of the money spent on their behalf. Is this who you'd want your kids to go to? Is this who you'd want to go to? Or is this who you want your kid in class next to being seen by an intern who might not be the best help we can provide? And is this the best we can do?
Thank you.
My name is Judy Neuhauser. I'm a citizen of Los Osos, and I teach at Monarch Grove until June 6th. can I just have a point of clarification? Can the board respond to this, since it is part of this public hearing and not part of the general public hearing? It is on the agenda? Wasn't that your question? Mr. Unger?
Well, the LCAP portion of it is a public hearing and can have a response. I don't really have a clear answer on that. Okay. I'm not sure what it is you're expecting. So, yeah, yes.
The Brown Act.
Excuse me. Go
thank
ahead.
You. The Brown Act requires that we post various items on the agenda in certain categories, and this was listed merely as a superintendent's update. A report. It's not intended as a discussion topic.
Okay.
So we can receive your comments now, but the board can't respond to you at this point.
Okay. Thank you. There's a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. I was interested in hearing Chris Dollar talk about looking at out-of-school suspensions. And I have to tell you, at Monarch Grove, our suspensions have mostly been in-school suspensions. We have a lot of children that come from very dysfunctional families, and the kids would be sent home to a household where there were no parents, or they would be sent home to a household that is totally chaotic, and the kids get a play day. And that's not what a suspension really is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be a vacation. And so we have tended to have a lot of in-school suspensions, and those aren't counted in the way that Chris Dollar was looking at ways in which our district has done better. So, I mean, we even had kids who were locked up in rooms with boards on the windows so they wouldn't throw themselves through windows as an in-school suspension. And that was going on for quite a while. That was with a person last year when we had no counselor at Monarch Grove due to a illness and then retirement of our counselor. And that child was one of the very neediest that I had known in quite a while. And that counselor disappeared from his life at the end of the year. His father was then killed and his brother was then killed, and he had to come in with a new counselor. The long-term relationships for children who are going through that kind of stress they're critical. It's like going to somebody and telling them your deepest, hardest problems that you're having, and then have that person, oh, I'm sorry, but we have to give you to a different person today. And next year, oh, it's a different person today. So that long-term continuity is really important. And so I'd like to see counselors full-time at the schools. Thank you.
Hello. I think we were on in a wrong spot. We did the thing wrong. So I'm going to tell you, if you don't already know, what the duties and responsibilities are.
Excuse me. Could you just please state your name for us?
Lene Coyner, Morro Bay High School. Okay, they make preliminary evaluations of the school problems of pupils referred by teachers, the principal, parents, and others. They assist pupils in their development of appropriate social behavior. Counsels pupils individually and in small groups in matters relating to the learning and adjustment processes of children. Counsels pupils and their parents on matters relating to the pupils' adjustment to school. Assist pupils in making appropriate decisions relative to their school program and their relationships with teachers, administrators, and other pupils. They provide a program of counseling that evaluates and assists pupils with inappropriate school behavior that negatively affects school achievement and or social adjustment. They provide consultation to classroom teachers in such areas as parent conferencing, behavior management, human relations, child growth, and development. They provide assistance to teachers in the interpretation of abilities and needs of individual pupils. They participate in parent-teacher conferences upon request. They refer students and families to appropriate school and county programs, community agencies, or individuals for specialized assistance and maintain a liaison relationship with resource personnel when necessary. They may serve as a core member of the school's student study team and, when appropriate, as a member of the individual education program or IEP team. They may serve as a member of the crisis intervention response team, which I think they all do. They maintain professional competence through participation in in-service education activities provided by the district and or self-selected professional growth activities. They adhere to laws, policies, procedures, and ethical standards of the school counseling profession. They collect and analyze data to guide programs, directions, and emphasis on an annual basis. And they may perform various supervision as well as additional related duties as assigned. So if we can think of doing that, all of those things. That's what their newly updated job description is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm Maureen McGee. I'm one of the district nurses. Margaret Kiro is another district nurse. Judith Geyer as well. They're standing here with me. So the San Luis Coastal Unified School District counseling program was reduced significantly last year, and this concerns us. There's five of us, and we heard from Lene the vast job description of the school counselor. Another thing that they do a lot is collaborate with us. We strive to meet the increasing demands of the students' physical and emotional health needs, with the shared goal of keeping the students healthy and ready to learn. Stressors that affect our students and their families greatly inhibit their success in school. During my 10 years with the district, I have seen the number of students suffering from anxiety, depression, ADD, ADHD, OCD, ODD, and many, many other mental health challenges rise sharply, and at the same time, community resources dwindle. As a result, students are coming to school with major life issues that need attention before they can even begin to focus on learning. This school year alone, I have personally experienced students who were hearing voices, victims of abuse, self-abusing, students exposed to drug abuse and violence at home, students who were on serious combinations of psychotropic medications. And then there are the students who are not on meds nor have a diagnosis, but come to the health room daily with various bodily ailments, headache, stomach ache, emotional health issues disguised as a physical ailment. They need intervention. We five nurses provide district coverage for the growing health needs of the district students. The counseling staff has been drastically reduced. I don't know who will fill the gaps that are left behind. Do you? Teachers, secretaries, principals? The emotional and mental health of our students is too great to leave to untrained professionals or paraprofessionals. The students of San Luis Coastal deserve better. The current counseling team working with unmanageable caseloads deserve better. Our community deserves better. Please consider restoring the student counselor ratio at San Luis Coastal to truly reflect a culture of care. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Lori Johnson. I teach at Los Ranchos. I also serve as Vice President of SLCTA. We had intended to be the first speakers tonight and introduce everyone else, but we still have some general points we'd like to make.
I'm Kathy Greer. I teach at Los Ranchos, and I serve as the primary elementary representative on SLCTA. Several stakeholders are here tonight, as you've heard, to talk about the current situation in school counseling services. The goal is to make the board aware of the realities, what we're dealing with in the classroom, and the impact on the reduction of counseling services.
Professionals in this district are not afraid of hard work. In fact, we embrace that challenge daily. Part of that hard work is implementing the rigorous standards in today's educational climate. We tirelessly strive for our kids to meet those standards. We understand the relationship between academic success and emotional well-being, so we all want our students to be happy and healthy while reaching these goals. We keep our eyes on so many things, including academic progress and student behaviors. School professionals have seen an increase in stressful behaviors. We all know that stress is related to many illnesses, and this is apparent in more visits to the nurse's room this year. There are also more trips to the bathroom during class time, and there are more bathroom accidents, another symptom of childhood stress. At times, we see frustration between students and parents as they learn the Common Core standards and methodology. School safety also becomes a worry for district professionals when we witness these increases in negative student behaviors. You've heard some more about those negative impacts from the other speakers.
We feel a definite miscue. In a time when educational expectations and stressful behaviors are on the rise, we are faced with a decrease in the services for these demanding behaviors. It's been a year since these cuts were made. We have deeply felt the harmful impact of these cuts to the counseling program. As you prepare to approve a budget for the next year, we ask that you restore school counseling services to previous levels. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your work on behalf of our students.
Hi, my name is Craig Stewart, and I'm an English teacher at San Luis Obispo High School. And I want to share some data with you guys that I got from our counseling staff. Every year, our counseling staff polls the senior class to find out over a range of different counseling services that they offer or have offered, to find out how it's utilized and what the seniors think about it. And I'd like to share with you the differences between the class of 11, 12, and 13 and 14. With each different category that they asked them, every category has seen a decrease, some more than others. The one that's seen the least decrease is comfortable meeting with the counselor, and that's only gone down 5%, and that's understandable because our counselors are great and the kids love them, and then that works out great. And then we have another one, another 5%, which is helped with future educational planning and college selection. That also only decreased 5%, with kids saying they agree that that's something that works for them with their counseling staff. But from there, it gets much worse. Helped identify attitudes and behaviors leading to successful learning. That's seen a decrease of 14% agreement among the students at our school. Helped me take personal responsibility for my actions has decreased 14%. Another category that's decreased in agreement of 14% is an effective advocate for me. From there, it goes up to 16%. The category of helped me develop an action plan to set and achieve realistic goals, that's gone down 16% over the course of those 2 years. Helped develop positive attitudes toward myself has gone down 18% in the agreement column between those 2 years. Helped develop career awareness, that's down 21%. Helped me develop effective coping skills for dealing with problems is down 21%. And then the largest decrease is helped me apply effective problem solving to make good choices. That's down 25% from the previous year. And with the reduction in the counseling staff, you can see that the awareness of the effect among the students themselves is fairly high and significant. And I know that it may be cost-effective to make some of these changes, I think that, you know, we'll be losing a lot, even though we may be gaining something financially. Thanks.
Charlie, you will be the last speaker on this issue. Thank you.
Okay.
You may speak.
Hi, I'm Charlie Perez. I teach English at Los Osos Middle School. I'm really glad that we're looking at this issue because it's really a salient issue. And I'm, being an English teacher, I'm here to give your evening metaphor. When I was working my way through college, I worked at a psychiatric hospital. My friend said, "What does a swing shift psych aide do anyway?" And I said, "Well, all day at work, I fill up the laundry bag, and I come home after the swing shift and sit down on the living room floor, and I sort out my kids' lives." And, you know, it's worked pretty well, I mean, for a metaphor for me. And you look through and you find, it's old school sorting, by the way. It's when you're looking for buttons that fell out to replace and hems and seams that blew out that need fixing. And, of course, the reds not bleeding all over the whites. And I found in the last almost 40 years since then that I do that same thing every night. And so do my colleagues. And our counselors take the brunt of it, that I may be carrying home 100 articles of clothing, but our counselors, or our counselor this year, is carrying 500 bags of clothing to take a look at. And it just worries me that if we can't address this and get more help, because what we've got is a valiant effort, but it's not cutting it, that we're going to have a whole lot more buttons falling off and a whole lot more hems blowing out and a whole lot more bleeding that's going uncontrolled. And it just really worries me, the idea that we might even consider cutting counselors that we did last year and then might consider not fixing that mistake. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Daller, I believe Mr. Unger has some questions for you.
Actually, I don't, because this is, we can, well, excuse me.
Come on, man, I stood up.
Sorry, Chris. We considered this public comment. Mrs. Holmes pointed out that public comment, the board does not respond to public comment. I'm going to hold my comments until we have the LCAP discussion. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Unger. Thank you, Mr. Daller. All right, well, we'll need to move on the agenda then. We did receive some correspondence. The following people have written to the board. Odile Aral regarding parking issues at Pacheco. Also, Rick Mayfield with a response to that. A letter from Yvette Fiorentino regarding mock trial. An email dated 4/28 from Judy Neuhauser regarding LCAP accountability plan. An email from Russ Rayburn regarding the cancellation of shop classes at the middle school. And a letter from a student, Amanda Wayland, regarding mock trial. Okay. Oh, we also have email dated from the 6th of May from Shannon Winsor regarding counseling services. And I think I mentioned all the other ones. So that's the correspondence the board has received. We are now at item 8.01, Day of the Teacher.
I think you have someone for a general public comment from Joyce Hansen.
Okay. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Joyce Hansen, principal at C.L. Smith, and I just wanted to take a moment to invite you to a celebration that's happening at C.L. Smith tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. I just want to let you know that through a community partnership, C.L. Smith will pay nothing for an $1,800 bike rack that was installed actually yesterday at our campus, and tomorrow afternoon we are having a dedication ceremony at our campus again at 2 o'clock, and you are invited to attend. And I just want to read you a quote from our parent, Ken Kino, who was instrumental in
securing the funds and getting the grant money to make this happen. And he said, every day we ride to school and bike racks are so jammed with bikes that it's hard to get my sons in, if we can at all. Oftentimes we have to lock his bike to a handrail or a pole, and I begin to worry that the overcrowding will discourage students from riding to school. Biking to school has so many benefits, from reducing congestion to getting kids active to saving families money, and we want to do as much as possible to encourage it. And so Mr. Keenow took it upon himself, after consulting with me, to go out and find the funds. He got parent donations, he got community donations, he wrote a grant application, and he got Peak Racks to donate all of their labor for the installation and delivery of the rack. So if you can join us tomorrow, we would love to have you, and that's at 2 o'clock at C.L. Smith. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Now we're at item 8.01, which is the Day of the Teacher. We have before us a resolution, and do we have anyone to speak to this issue? Mrs. Newland?
The Day of the Teacher, and we want to recognize all of our fantastic teachers in this district. We are just so lucky to have the teaching staff that we do. As I walk around the campuses and see what's going on in the classrooms, it's truly, truly a delight. So let's honor our teachers.
And I'm going to thank you very much. And I'm going to read the proclamation. So for the Day of the Teacher. Whereas it is appropriate that we recognize our teachers and express our gratitude for the interest in and the concern they have for our students, and whereas our teachers frequently and often selfishly participate in non-classroom activities that enhance the education of our students, and whereas, along with academic instruction, teachers provide students with valuable guidance, support, and encouragement towards helping students become tomorrow's leaders, and whereas providing quality education to our young people continues to be our never-ending challenge, as it represents society's greatest and most lasting gift to new generations, and whereas the future of our state and country depends largely on the work of dedicated and professional teachers, and whereas school teachers are relied upon to ensure that our children receive proper instruction in a wide range of subjects, now, therefore, let it be resolved that the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District proclaims May 14th as Day of the Teacher and encourages all citizens to participate in the observance to express their appreciation. Do we have a motion? Is there someone who would like to speak to this? And we open this to public comment. Okay. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Unger moves the adoption of Resolution 11-13-14.
I'll second.
And a second by Mrs. Schaefer. All in favor? Aye. It's a roll call vote. Thank you.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Schaefer?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger? Passes 6-0.
Thank you. Now we are on to item 8.02. Classified Employees Week.
And as you saw earlier, not only do we have some phenomenal teachers in this district, but we have excellent classified employees of the year. This is a perfect time to recognize them, as you saw tonight. And so we would like to have you adopt the resolution for the Classified Employees Week of the Year.
And they get a week. That's wonderful. Okay. I'm going to read that declaration also, that proclamation. Whereas classified school employees provide valuable services to the schools and students of the district, and whereas classified school employees contribute to the establishment and promotion of positive instructional environment, and whereas classified school employees serve a vital role in providing for the welfare and the safety of the district students, and whereas classified employees employed by the district and represented by the School Employees Association, California School Employees Association, Service Employees International Union, and confidential employee units strive for excellence in all areas relative to the educational community, Now, therefore, let it be resolved that the Board of Trustees of San Luis Coastal Unified School District hereby recognizes and wishes to honor the contribution of the classified school employees to the quality education in the state of California and in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, and declares the week of May 18th to May 24th as Classified Employees Week. Do we have a motion?
I'll move approval of resolution number 12-13-14.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. And a second?
I'd like to second that.
And Ms. Roger is the second.
Mr. Millar? Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman? Has left? Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Quessenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Passes 5-0 with one absent. And we'll squeak Mr. Unger in on the eyes. Mr. Buckman.
All right. We are now at item 9.01, local control accountability, the hearing and discussion. This is the first reading of the LCAP.
I'll kick us off here. So tonight, we will present to you the first public hearing of San Luis Coastal's Local Control Accountability Plan. Before staff presents highlights of the plan, I think it is important to recognize what this is and what this isn't. This plan doesn't recognize those things that we consider our maintenance of effort. What is status quo here in San Luis Coastal? San Luis Coastal is a community-funded district. We receive more revenue per pupil than our revenue limit neighbors. Now, how does that translate? Well, one way is that we have small schools. Even our largest elementary school is half the size of an elementary in Santa Maria. Small schools mean that our students are known. Small schools means that they are generally safer. It's a value we hold. We pay higher wages in San Luis Coastal. Our teachers make more. Our administrators make more. I make more than most people in my job classification. We have good class size ratios. We have clean campuses. We still transport students to and from school. We have counselors, even at our elementary schools. We have school nurses. We have EL specialists. We have a wide range of special education supports. We have very few problems recruiting employees. What our local control accountability plan addresses are those things that are over and above this status quo. It speaks to our vision over the next 3 years, what we plan on doing while maintaining much of what we are already doing. Most school districts are presenting their plans during this month with the promise of additional funds called a local control funding formula. Because we are community funded, we don't get those additional funds. Our local property tax revenue increases are what are our fuel for our local control accountability plan. These increases are modest, but at least we have some this year. The bulk of those increases, almost all of them, will go to that maintenance of effort, step and column raises, hiring new teachers to reduce class sizes, increases in health and statutory benefits. So our plan is assuming fairly flat revenue. Where we have made staffing and program increases, we have made decreases elsewhere. This LCAP is designed with input and compliance from three sources. First, this is our continual refinement of the strategic initiatives for student success that the board adopted and has been our guiding vision for the last 3 years. Second, this plan responds to the 8 state priorities we are required to respond to by law. And third, this plan is in response to what we have heard from our stakeholders in dozens of meetings all over our community, our staffs, teachers, parents, community leaders, principals. It includes continued work on the common core areas of math, writing, and reading. It reduces pull-out staff development and keeps teachers at their sites more with an embedded coaching model where our elementary instructional coaches also provide intervention services directly for students. It adds summer school. It adds more home-to-school transportation and after-school transportation. It further expands our STEAM programs. It creates a sinking fund for our music program. It adds some counseling and mental health therapist supports. It feeds our students breakfast. It assumes that much of the work we have done over the last 3 years preparing our teachers for the Common Core state standards will be assimilated this year. We would have liked to have it include increases in the elementary student day, as our elementary students have the shortest student day in the entire county, barely above the state minimum. We would have liked to have it include increased preparation time built into the school day for our elementary teachers, but those are negotiable items, and we are currently at impasse in our negotiations. If we can look at this next slide, Mrs. Holmes. What we did is we took our 10 initiatives for student success and kind of lumped them into six focus areas, which our staff will kind of go over and discuss those six areas. This is a first reading, so we're very eager to get your feedback as a board and the feedback of our public. We have to be extremely careful in controlling our personnel costs. So any changes that affect personnel will need to be very cautiously approached and probably be cut elsewhere. I'd like to introduce my colleagues, Diane Frost, Kimberly McGrath, and Amy Shields, who will present a detail of our local control accountability plan.
Thank you, Rick.
Take it away.
I'm going to try and talk and click at the same time. I may need some assistance. Tonight, we're going to share highlights from the six focus areas of the LCAP plan. Each focus area contains elements from both elementary and secondary, as well as actions that serve low-income students, English learners, and our foster youth as required by the LCAP plan. We will attempt to be brief, and yet I ask for your forgiveness if I get a bit wordy. The work that is being done by our teachers, our coaches, our administrators, and support staff is immense, and we want to make sure you have the big picture of what we hope to accomplish next year, all tied around student achievement. And with that, we'll begin. Focus Area 1, San Luis Coastal students will achieve substantial academic gains in mathematics. We'll be targeting six specific areas in the plan to meet this goal. We'll continue our efforts for strengthening classroom instructional strategies. Our teachers have been working diligently over the past 3 years to dramatically shift instructional practices in the classroom to align with the rigor of the Common Core. Our focus next year will be to support teachers as they assimilate all that they have learned to practical applications in their classrooms through site-based professional development, model lessons, and on-site coaching. The emphasis is on site-based and having teachers in their classrooms with their students. We listened. There will be a marked decrease in days out of the classroom next year. Area 2 is we will continue our efforts to educate our community through evening workshops to increase parents' understanding of the rigor in the Common Core and the pathways available for our students to achieve academic success in mathematics. Number 3, we'll finalize the development and implement new Common Core aligned math units for grades 3 through Algebra 1. Next, we'll pilot and implement new mathematics programs. In fact, later this evening, I will be asking you to adopt a new math program that was piloted by 20 of our K-2 teachers this year. Next fall, we hope to pilot the Bridges 3rd through 5th grade program, as well as the CPM program for Geometry and Algebra 2. We'll strengthen mathematics supports for students needing interventions or accelerations, including personalized learning opportunities. This will include targeted professional development for our special education teachers and the purchase of both math intervention and acceleration programs. And finally, we'll strengthen the use of data cycles to inform instruction, intervention, and professional development. Specific plans for next year including evaluating the SBAC interim assessments when they become available and continuing to refine our common assessments to fully align with the upcoming SBAC. Our metrics that we're using include the annual yearly progress, or AYP as we call it, as well as the results, and I've got a new alphabet soup for you tonight, from the California Assessment of Student Performance and Progress, or we will now call it the CASP. The CASP will include results from student performances on the SBAC assessment, or the Smarter Balanced Assessment. For 2015, the AYP and CASP results will be used to establish a baseline, and from here we set yearly growth targets. We will also continue the use of common assessments to measure progress in mathematics. Focus Area 2, San Luis Coastal students will achieve substantial academic gains in English language arts and literacy. We'll be targeting seven specific actions on this goal. We'll begin by continuing to develop and expand classroom instructional strategies within our comprehensive literacy model. It's important for you to hear, we have redesigned our instructional coaching model for 2014-15, so coaches will be assigned to one site, will work half-time as an ELD or intervention teacher with our most at-risk students, and half-time as a coach, both in mathematics and in English language arts. With the dramatic decrease of teachers out of the classroom for district-level PD next year, we believe this revised site-based coaching model will better serve our students and our teachers. In addition to site-based professional development, we'll offer a menu of after-school workshops, including a new teacher academy and K-3 word study series for teaching phonics, spelling, and vocabulary. In secondary, we want to strengthen classroom instructional strategies with professional development, modeling, and on-site coaching. This will include training in writing that complements the elementary writing workshop model, classroom coaching, and the support of a part-time consultant will be developing the Common Core aligned English units. Next, we'll want to strengthen English language arts supports for students needing interventions and accelerations, including personalized learning opportunities, just like in mathematics. We're going to continue our implementation of reading recovery and leveled literacy intervention to support our youngest struggling readers. Our goal is to ensure a seamless transition between best practices happening in our classrooms and research-based interventions to get all students reading at grade level or higher. In secondary, we'll expand personalized learning opportunities for students needing interventions and acceleration with programs such as Read 180, Achieve 3000. Our goal is to reach more English learners, students with IEPs, and accelerated learners. We will provide materials needed for instruction, intervention, and acceleration. Am I close? No, I'm behind. I'm ahead. I'm good. Provide materials for instruction, intervention, acceleration, including our writing curriculum, leveled books, and some more support materials. Will enhance, I'm ahead of myself, K-12 ELD instruction, support, and services to align with best practices. The elementary and secondary allocation for EL teachers and instructional aides will remain the same for 2014-15. In elementary, we will team our coaches with EL specialists to support teachers' development of best practices in the classroom. EL specialists or coach will provide supplementary instruction for our beginning English learners. Site-based PD will focus on new ELD standards and the correlation to the Common Core. In secondary, we will develop a matrix of support to strengthen the model for our beginning English learners, as well as purchase needed materials such as Rosetta Stone. Next, we'll strengthen our use of the data cycle in both ELA and ELD to inform instruction, intervention, and professional development. Our common assessments will continue to be refined and aligned with the Common Core expectations. In addition, teachers will review and evaluate the ESPEC interim assessments when they become available. And finally, we'll enhance literacy instruction in science, social science, and career technology electives through professional development for our secondary teachers. Our metrics are very similar to mathematics, with the addition of the AMH-02 measurement, where we want to see annual yearly progress for our English learners, as well as our district common assessments.
Our third focus area states that we want to provide students with a world-class STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, as well as a career tech education program. Oh, gosh. Here we go. Okay. There are four action steps in order to accomplish this focus area. So the first one we want to look at is understand and design an implementation plan for next generation science standards. New science standards have been developed and adopted to stimulate and build interest for STEAM programs. These standards set the foundation for local decisions about curriculum assessment and instruction. Implementing improved K-12 science standards will better prepare high school graduates for the rigor of colleges and careers. Teachers need professional development and time to understand these new standards, the impact that they'll have on their curriculum, their instruction, and their assessment. The second action is to develop and articulate model STEAM programs. We have a great start right here at Los Osos Middle School. We need to transition that program to seventh grade and to support teachers with professional development in things like using a makerspace, programming and coding, engineering practices, and robotics, as well as look at how to expand those concepts to other sites. Our third action is to enhance and modernize our arts programs. Our arts programs are strong, and they need continued, but also systematic and planned supports in order to continue to develop. The final action for this action step is to modernize and improve middle school and high school elective programs to also include career tech electives. We will gather input from teachers as well as industry and post-secondary representatives in order to gather ideas about how to modernize these programs into appropriate college and career options, as well as aligning with our STEAM concepts. Teachers will also receive support in incorporating the career tech education model and literacy standards. The metrics that we'll use to measure this are our Next Generation Science Standards Implementation Survey and Observation Notes, the participation in our STEAM programs, as well as student access to arts programs, and increased access to modernized career tech elective courses.
Focus Area 4 calls for us to create an intentional culture of care and intervention and support for our students. This focus area is broad, encompassing four of our initiatives. We'll be targeting six specific action areas to meet this goal. Kim, can you help me out with that?
Are we going up or down? Oh.
We're going up. I may continue. Our first area is to refine and enhance our counseling model. As Chris and I mentioned in our earlier presentation, our hope is to expand our current school counselors to allow support at Teach and Sinsheimer, but in addition, we'd like to increase the support at our sites through paid MFTI counselors. We are planning for support at both the elementary and secondary sites, and also hope to expand the preventative mental health model found at Loam's to both Laguna and Pacific Beach. We'll continue to support the family resource centers both on the coast and in San Luis. A critical piece to this plan is to streamline the responsibilities of our current school counselors. Identifying those critical job components that directly impact our students is our focus. As Chris also mentioned, an additional program specialist, allowing all of our program specialists to coordinate and facilitate 504s at each site, is requested. This addition will relieve our school counselors of a very time-consuming responsibility while ensuring continuity throughout the district regarding this critical student support. Our next area is to strengthen our special education opportunities. Professional development is critical for teachers of students with special needs, just as it's important for general education teachers. This action allows us to provide training for our SDC classes while continuing to participate in professional development offered to all SLC teachers. We're also looking at curriculum for our 18 to 22-year-old PREPARE program, professional development, and other support to ensure the seamless inclusion of our special needs students on all campuses, and software to support our IEP managers as they, too, are transitioning to the Common Core. Our next area is to provide support for EL, SED, foster, and homeless youth. While you will hear about specific academic intervention opportunities in other focus areas, this particular area ensures access to those opportunities. Specifically, translation services for our families, breakfast before school where possible, and transportation from a district-provided late bus. Our next area is early connection and identification before kindergarten. This action addresses the much-needed early intervention programs provided in San Luis Coastal. We're so pleased to boast a progressive preschool program for our children and families. This program that serves more than 100 children who otherwise would not have this opportunity will be provided materials, supplies, and curriculum. We will also provide a kindergarten roundup to ensure early support to our families. You'll also notice that a new transitional kindergarten is planned for Bishop's Peak Elementary. Startup costs are included here. The next area is to create a district-wide multi-tiered system of support. Throughout much of the LCAP, you'll see reference to intervention programs such as preschool, summer school, AVID, Read 180, Alex Math, LLI, and Reading Recovery. Our hope is to formalize a system for our students. When we see a student stumbling academically, we want to have a structure in place to provide support. Our vision is a streamlined system of support that's timely, evidence-based, and provides increasing rigor and purpose in its implementation. We see this as a district-wide K-12 need, and to that end have included an interventionist in our plan. You'll also notice in this action item our intervention summer school, including transportation, and funds to support our AVID program. Finally, ensuring safe and nurturing campuses. Ensuring safe campuses where students feel connected to each other, their teachers, and the school itself is a hallmark of an effective school and district. In this action item, administrators and staff will receive training on cultural competency, bullying curriculum will be explored for use across the district, and PBIS, or Positive Behavioral Support Systems, will be piloted at C.L. Smith Elementary School. Using the second steps to respect curriculum found in the budget, teachers deliver explicit instruction in social, emotional, and academic skills to their students. We will continue using School Messenger to inform parents of students' absences and will pilot new software that allows us to track SSTs throughout the district. And then finally, the metrics for this focus area. Parent, student, staff climate survey results. We're hoping to do two surveys next year using the National School Climate Survey. Records of counseling support, including contact hours and outside referrals. Data on students that include things like served school breakfast program, transported on our late bus, enrolled in summer school, enrolled in AVID. Our preschoolers are finally reaching first grade, our first goal of preschoolers, so we'll do a longitudinal study there. And then we'll also look at attendance, truancy, and suspension data.
Focus area number 5 states technology and innovation as a focus. This focus area has 5 main actions. We want to create visionary leadership teams that model best practices in the use of technology. Our goal is to create model classrooms at each site that not only use technology to engage and to modernize, but to also use technology, the science of technology, to be able to individualize and personalize learning so that we can better meet individual student needs. When Amy and Ryan and I went around to sites and heard about information about technology, we often heard teachers say things like, we understand that's the future, we understand that's what kids need and that's where they're headed, but we need to see it in action. We don't yet know what feedback to give you because we don't know how to utilize that. So what we would love to do is to create model classrooms, use our 1 or 2 ed tech lead teachers per site to create that model so that teachers can see how does this help students not just be engaged and modernize it, but how does this actually help to engage so that students can have a more personalized, individualized learning experience. We also want to continue to support Pacheco's 2-way immersion program and re-examine our elementary library model. Our second action step will be to modernize and improve classroom instruction, including the implementation of Google Apps for Education. Every teacher and student will have access to Gmail next year, which includes Google Apps for Education. We will provide training for teachers to better understand how to use this tool so that it can make an instructional impact. The third is we want to foster our community partnerships to modernize our programs. We have the opportunity to utilize the expertise that surrounds us with Cuesta College and Cal Poly and amazing tech companies in our area. We've applied for a Pathway Trust Grant in coordination with Cuesta College that would allow us to further develop our information communication and technology pathway, and we want to further develop these partnerships in order for it to have an impact on our instruction and make sure that we're headed towards the college and career pathways that students need. The next action is to research and implement personalized learning opportunities. Our goal is to continue to look for ways to meet individual student needs. There's many opportunities to personalize student learning, just like the one Dr. Prater mentioned a few meetings ago. We need to research these opportunities, and we need to implement and evaluate their effectiveness to make sure it's having an impact on student learning. Our final action step is to use technology to improve communication. We have our district-wide website project underway. We're going to need to finish this project and really refine it to fine-tune to make sure that we're utilizing it at a district level, a site level, and then teacher websites also to make sure that we're creating that partnership with families. What metrics are we going to use to measure this? Anecdotal surveys would be one way for us to measure that. Having increased access to technology and innovative practices, we can use Google Analytics to measure how much Google Apps for Education is being utilized in order to impact instruction, and also an increased access to personalized learning.
Thanks. And finally, focus action number 6, San Luis Coastal will strengthen the use of data cycle to improve academic achievement. We're going to do this with 4 major steps. Improve instructional practices utilizing our teacher evaluation system based on the Charlotte Danielson's framework for teaching. This system is truly a data cycle in action. Number 2, we want to pilot and refine the elementary standards-based report cards. In the next couple weeks, we're going to be asking all of our teachers to complete a survey to help us determine which sites are ready to move forward and which sites will wait a year until we get all the bugs worked out. And so we certainly plan and hope that we are able to pilot at some of our sites and get that feedback. Our third action is to strengthen both district and site use of the data cycle with selected assessments to inform instructional decisions and professional development. And finally, we want to strengthen the use of online programs to provide timely data for students, parents, and staff. This includes things like InfoSnap, our online parent registration program, as well as Naviance software, which provides an opportunity for students to explore career options and to create a 6-year plan of courses. So here's the ABC soup of metrics. I think you will recognize most of those. These are all of the variety of yearly data sources that we will use to determine progress, as well as a end-of-year teacher and parent survey regarding the success or ideas for refinements to the standards aligned report card.
Board, this is a whole lot to digest, and I realize it. When you review the template that was essentially handed down to us by the state of California, you can realize how difficult it is to assimilate that information and make sense of it. So tonight, Rick, Diane, Kim, and Amy did, I think, a yeoman's job of pulling it together for you and synthesizing it. It has been a long journey. The LCAP, the whole process has been something that I think is a wonderful addition to our program model. I think reaching out to the community and to our staff in earnest and seeking their feedback added a third layer to what we normally already do, and distilling all of that feedback and information and truly listening has been a worthwhile endeavor. This is our first draft. I think it reflects exceptional thinking, though not perfect. It is a reflection of our effort to take something that's quite complex and make sense of it, given our limited resources. So I leave it to you for discussion and to hear from the public.
Okay, we have an interest here to have public comment first and then bring it back for board discussion. So we will open it for public comment at this time. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board on... Oh, you have a number of ones. Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
All right. First, I have Janet Gould, followed by Charlie Perry S., and then Laurie Johnson and Kathy Greer, and then we'll go on from there.
Good evening, Janet Gould, principal at Delmar Elementary, along with all of your other instructional leaders from the elementary schools, with the exception of Dr. Skoulis, who couldn't be here this evening but wanted to express that he too would be joining us. And we're just here to show that we're unanimously in support of instructional coaches at the elementary school elementary schools with the new model that Amy spoke of tonight with the site-based instructional coaches. And this is something similar that was implemented at Del Mar this year, and we felt it was very successful. And you will be hearing from a couple of the principals this evening as to why we feel this is so valuable. But we just wanted to unanimously show you that we all are very much in support of this model. So thank you.
Thank you for all showing up.
Just want to speak to the Jeff Martin principal at Sinsheimer. I'm 6'3", and I think it was set for Amy. Sorry. Just want to speak to the value of working with an instructional coach. I found it to be tremendously rewarding, and it's something that, as an instructional leader at my site, to be able to have somebody to rely on to provide that support for teachers has been tremendous. We've really made some exceptional growth, I think, in our district over the past 2 years with that instructional coach in place. I'd hate to see that compromised in any way. And I think just speaking to the value of that, having been in another district where I was fortunate enough to have that opportunity to work with an instructional coach as well, and really knowing that we're really about student achievement in our district. And I think that that's critical. We know that one of the most important factors to student achievement is having an exceptional teacher in every classroom. And in order to support that, we do have exceptional teachers in our district, but everybody's got room for growth and improvement. And creating that culture of continuous improvement is critical. And as an instructional leader at my site, I don't find that I have, I mean, honestly, it's great. I love that aspect of my job, and I make it a priority. But if that's what's one of the things that matters most, I think we need to be able to know that instructional leader in working in partnership with me to build that collaborative culture makes a huge difference. So I just want to speak to the value of that, and I hope that you take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlie Perez. Okay. Laurie Johnson and Kathy Greer, with regard to Pecan. Craig Stewart. Maureen McGee. Bridget Bogus, she spoke before. Lene spoke before. Karen O'Donnell.
More Amy size. I'm Karen O'Donnell. I teach here at Los Osos Middle School as the aunt of Riley O'Donnell, who passed away this last February. I feel it is my obligation to speak on a very personal level to the value of counseling here at our school. All of the counselors that came for that crisis made a huge difference to me personally, to my niece Maddie, who goes to school here, to the 30 kids that were in the library waiting for us on the day that Riley passed. They couldn't function, and to know that our counselors were there, the counselor that they know, Jennifer, that she would be there day after day for them at any moment, as she provided that day for us, so casual, so loving, it was really such a gift. So I have to say that. And then with the suicide that we had here on our campus, again, the counseling, the crisis team that came together, enormous. 200 kids, was it, Jennifer? 200 kids were in the library that day when we got that news. And those 200 kids could not function. And they knew that the next day they could go see Jennifer, and the next month, and next year they can go see Jennifer. And it's I just want to speak so highly of that culture of care. Thank you all so much.
and have needed them this year.
And are 100% behind what our colleagues have said tonight.
Yes, but we also want to appreciate the support from the district and the school board over the past few years through the implementation of the Common Core. Although it was overwhelming and very challenging at times, we have both experienced that and we're not afraid to admit that. We couldn't have done it without the help of the instructional coach at our site and the professional development.
So we just wanted to also say that we're really looking forward to another year of implementing the workshop model in reading, writing, and math, as well as implementing the standards-based report card to really go with the teaching that we're doing in our classrooms.
Thank you.
I just want to say that I'm loving all the time I get to spend up here tonight. Okay. As a former resource specialist, instructional coach, and newly appointed principal in the district, I'm here to express my support of the instructional coaching intervention model currently being considered. As a resource specialist, I was part of my school site's intervention team, where teachers would come and share concerns about struggling students, and we would do our best to brainstorm ways to support that student. Inevitably, the result was the student being pulled from the classroom for some targeted support in a particular area. And I would like to say that this was a successful approach, but in reality, we typically discuss the same group of students with the same deficit areas from year to year. And I kept coming to the conclusion that something different needed to happen. As an instructional coach, I was given the opportunity to spend time in classrooms, discuss practice with teachers, and assist my site principals in informing teachers about the shift to the Common Core standards and the rigorous new writing curriculum. I also spent time with highly committed teachers discussing struggling students and the teacher's successes and failures in reaching those students. In all honesty, there were many days that I would question the Common Core, the adoption of the new writing curriculum, and even the utility of my position as a coach. But then I started to notice something. I noticed that students were growing, that they were starting to speak out in class, that they viewed themselves as writers whose words could make a difference, and struggling students were beginning to catch up. There was something different happening, and coaches were a key part of that something different. Now, as a principal, I see even more the value in having. In fact, the only frustration that I'm hearing from my teachers is the limited amount of time the coach is on campus, which makes it difficult to sustain the momentum. A coach on site daily would give more opportunities for the job-embedded, ongoing professional development that increases teacher effectiveness. Increased teacher effectiveness yields higher student achievement. It's that something different that's beginning to happen in San Luis Coastal, and I'll be very sad to see it go, if it does go. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to? Please come forward.
Thank you. My name is Jim Nett, and I have the luxury of being a teacher here at San Luis Coastal. And I've had the privilege to teach at the elementary school level, and currently I'm in secondary. And I wanted to applaud the district on this work they've done on the LCAP model in vetting a lot of those interest groups and putting together what is, as you see, a very comprehensive look at where to spend the money in the school district. I personally wanted to focus on Focus Area 4 because I was present last year, and I think you all remember the anguish and lament that each board member shared when faced with the budget cuts. And in last year's budget cuts, a lot of that was counselors on site. And I think you all remember very clearly how painful that was and how many of you felt you had your back to the wall. The district didn't have money. We had to have a balanced budget. And you wished you didn't have to cut counseling. Well, the budget is better. The budget is more balanced. We did not even spend all the money this year, and we're looking at a slightly but improved situation next year. And I want you to go back to those feelings you had, because you have before you a chance to remedy some of what you felt was difficult. And I wanted to applaud Mr. Dowler and Mrs. Frost also, because they have worked very hard as they presented to identify some of what we lost and look at ways to try and reinforce support for our students. But I think what's missing from that picture is the understanding, again, of the role the site counselor plays as an advocate for every student on that campus, not necessarily as a therapist. And as they presented that wonderful pyramid, we do need outside services. We need targeted intervention. But before you can have intervention, you need to identify to me. In personal issues, I'm in a different role. And so are administrators. And they have one person in secondary, I know, because I work there currently, that they will go to and open up their heart and share secrets they need to get advice on and get mentored and get advice that they can apply so they can go back to learning, which is what I need in my classroom, is students that can engage in this wonderful Common Core and all the things we are spending the money on. And I think in your hearts you realize that a student today who's dealing with a lot of the issues that you know exist in our community needs a daily support system, just knowing there's someone in that office that they can go to. So I hope you will look at that area. Thank you. I'll wind up and find the money that we have in this year's budget to replace some of what we lost last year in restoring on-site counseling as much as you can, because the proposal before us isn't really filling that gap. Thank you.
Hello again. My name is Judy Neuhauser. I just have a couple of questions. One of the things, I ended up downloading the LCAP, it's sort of the budget, I guess. It's this document. And I was a little confused by it. It seems like things show up over and over again, I guess because they're in the different focus areas. And I'm also not getting enough information to understand where really the money's going. There's $337,000 for math TOSAs, consultant, math support teachers, professional development, substitute time, books, materials. Is there a breakdown of that? What goes to the math TOSAs? What goes to the math support teachers? What goes to professional development? I'm assuming there's a breakdown. And how is that accessible to the public? So if somebody at some point could address that and let me know how I can get that, I'd really appreciate that. Couple of things that I can think of that I just wanted to comment on. What I've used this year, since what the district provided us in the math binders was not a set of lessons that were sequential, that were Common Core based. It was, here's an activity and here's an activity and go look at Envision and go look at Investigations and go look at Bridges, which I actually didn't have for third grade, and go look at this and go look at that. I just went, they've got problem solving. I mean, they have all that stuff. So that's what I've ended up using for the last little bit of my time once I discovered it. I'm really glad to hear that you're looking at district-wide programs for certain issues. The one that I didn't hear mentioned, and I'd really like to know how you're planning to address it, is EL newcomers. I had an EL newcomer with zero English this year. Baywood had one with zero English. It wasn't Spanish. My student was not allowed to go to Pacheco. Pacheco was full. I was told, make it up. That's not a district-wide program. I'd like a district-wide program for non-Pacheco students, for total newcomers who have no English. And I think that's something that will help the district as a whole. So I'd like to see that addressed in next year's budget also. The other thing is tech. I think this district is going very hard on tech. I think they need to slow down for just a moment in terms of access to the tech. I was at the ELAC meeting at Monarch Grove, and one of the parents who has a middle school student has a student who's running from family to family trying to figure out how to get his homework done. There's no late bus, he has no internet access and can't get internet access where he lives on his little farm. He's a farm worker. So until we have access for those students, how is it equitable access to the curriculum? Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Debbie Heck. sorry. I'm a teacher at Laguna Middle School. I teach math, although this last semester I have been a TOSA, teacher on special assignment. I, as well as Rose Juhas from Los Osos Middle School, have been working diligently on rewriting math curriculum that is some based on Engage New York. But one thing we've realized is there is no silver bullet, at least right now. There is no curriculum that has been written that matches Common Core perfectly. Engage New York is one of the programs that we've used in and out, but there are some parts missing. There's no formal assessment lessons, there's no problem of the month, and there's not a lot of cooperative group activities. There are some, but not enough. So we've been working really hard on rewriting the middle school computer, and we showed them our day-to-day, lesson-by-lesson plan that included all of those elements that I've listed. And they were amazed. And we've only been able to do that because we've been released from our classrooms for a whole semester, both of us working on this. Although next year, we are hoping that the district will support a couple of math coaches part-time to help the teachers implement these new lessons. It is a new way of teaching for middle school, and teachers need to have someone there to help them understand how all of this fits together. And so I'm asking you that if you have the money, that it would be great to have a couple of math coaches for the middle school. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any more public comment? Anybody else who wishes to address the board? Okay. Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Mr. Buckman and then Mr. Millar.
Oh, go ahead, Mark.
And then Mr. Unger.
Well, I almost don't know where to start. there is so much out there and so much to digest. You know, I feel like a snake that's been given something to eat, and I've just got my mouth around it, and I'm waiting for it to digest. You know what? There's a lot to like about our LCAP plan. There's a lot of things in there that I think we heard from the community, we've continued to hear from the community about that we needed to do. Late buses, breakfasts, summer school. I can't even think about all the things that you've thought about here. I think there's some things that we need to consider more. I think one of the things that I'd like us to think about is, in reference to counseling, is it fair, is the counseling allocation fair? So if you have a school that has 500 students like Del Mar does, and you have a student and you have a school that has fewer students, is that a fair allocation? Because I think not only can we look at numbers of students, for example, instructional coaches work to help the principals be instructional leaders. The counselors help set up that community of care in the schools, but I think a lot of times our counselors wind up being quasi-administrators as well. And I think that's something that we need to look at. Okay, yeah. Because are those things, and you talked about that, are those things taking away from the primary job of the counselor, which should be to work on that climate at that school and to help serve those kids? Something that I got out of this is we seem to have a lot of discussion, and I guess there's agreement, I think there's agreement, on the mental health needs of our students. I do, though, believe that this is a community issue, you guys. You guys, I need to talk to the board. And I think we need to do everything we can in our community to get community resources to be working with our students and our school sites so that our kids can have all the services they need, especially for mental health. You know, I have a dog in that fight since I run both of our day treatment programs here in this county. So those are just some of my thoughts about the counseling. I was going to talk about this actually during board reports, but Friday I was back up in my favorite town, Sacramento, and I was at a meeting for the Cities, Counties, and Schools Consortium. And one of the things that they talked about were how school districts are working with their communities, leveraging money from their communities to provide supports for kids, mental health supports, after-school enrichment for kids, parks, home, you know, food for kids, all those kinds of things, which I think we're starting to do with our family resource centers and some of the things I'm hearing, but I think we could be looking at that as well. Just kind of random thoughts. I really think that we need to continue to look at how our instructional coaches will work. And I think what I heard people saying and what I get from the teachers I talk to is that there are folks that know that it worked for them and then folks that aren't sure it really worked. And so I think that we're looking at what I feel like we're looking at our socioeconomic kids. I like that we talked about the multi-tiered support for kids. I think that again, if we're talking about communities, we have communities and schools, and then we have the community in general. And so I really appreciated the conversation about that summer school, especially for our EL students. The summer school and the late buses are so important, and we heard that time and time again from our DLAC folks on several occasions. Kim McGrath, just something I know that's a big issue out there that I at some point would like to know more about were concerns about privacy and the Google apps. So I think that we will need to answer that question and be prepared to talk about are we making sure that our students' privacy is protected when we work with big companies, you know. Jeff, I just wanted to say how much I appreciated what you were saying again, article in Ed Week about the need for the difficulty that principals have running a school and being the instructional leaders. And I think you guys as principals, I've got to applaud you because you guys have a tough job. And you are trying to be instructional leaders and you're running a school. And, you know, a kid has a problem in school and you're making sure that it gets taken care of, you know. And I don't think you can do it all. And that's why we need that, the counselors, and we need the instructional coaches. I guess, Judy, I'd like to just, I thought you brought some interesting questions up. And thank you, Debbie, for talking about where some of that curriculum money goes, because I'd be kind of curious about that. $300,000 is a lot of money. I know that the curriculum that we're still not getting the curriculum that we really need to get yet, and I'm hopeful that it's on its way. We'll be talking later about approving textbooks, and I just did a quick calculation. One of the things that just shocked me was the cheapest textbooks I think I looked at were $130 a piece, and they average about $200 a textbook. Is that not correct? That's a lot of money. Judy, I thought your question about what are we going to do for EL students who come in with no English whatsoever, they can't go to Pacheco because they haven't had the Pacheco, you know, they haven't started. So what do we do with kids like that? Because that's clearly within the targeted groups, even though we're not getting targeted money. And as everybody knows, I wish we were getting more money at what we're doing for those non-English speaking kids who show up and you know, maybe have just crossed the border. So I think that's really interesting. Those are just some things that I think we need to think about. I know this is coming back to us. I just want to say how much I appreciate the hard work that everybody did. And I want to thank everybody who stayed for this discussion and for all the teachers that really spoke up tonight. Usually when we start talking about budget, folks flee. This is the most important thing that we're going to be doing all year. This is the change in education that we've been thinking about for the past, I don't know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. the elimination of categoricals and local control. So your input is not only valued, it's necessary, and it's the law requires it. So I just, again, want to thank you all for coming, and thank you all for sticking it out. And I hope you come to the next few meetings we have as we hammer this thing out and come to a final decision, because this is, you're absolutely right, Judy, this is our budget. This is what's driving our budget, and when this is what we're going to be held to standard on when the county office reviews us to make sure that we're making the achievement that we say we're going to be making based on the local input that we've got.
Mr. Buckman and then Mr. Millar.
Thank you, Jim. It's a hard act to follow, Chris. I have maybe some more specific questions, and knowing that this is a draft, an incredible draft, I can't know how you keep track of it. I thought I'd just ask some questions that were missing for me, or I need some clarification on. We talk throughout the LCAP process. We talk about involving community groups, parents, and others within, other stakeholders within our community. And one of the things I noticed was under parent involvement, and it's quite similar to the Title I that we used to do, there was $6,000 one year, $6,000 another year, and $6,000 another year. And, you know, the number we're throwing around is $337,000. And so I'm hoping that as we look at that, or
is for Common Core math education nights for parents. That's because of the possibility of utilizing consultants to help us do that. But I think it's fair to say, and I love that my principals are here tonight, we do a lot of free professional and development and parent workshops with the support of our principals, our counselors, our teachers, our TOSAs, our coaches. So there's not a cost involved, and one of the things that we had talked about earlier is if we pilot out the report card, there will be extensive parent education that goes with that. It will come out of the work will come out of my office, and then will be presented by our staff.
Okay, hopefully your office and not your purse. So report card was the second one that I wanted to mention, and I think you've answered it. I just want to be really clear that as I looked at that report card, I would need a lot of help with it. And if it's on the radar, I think that's great. One of the other things that caught my eye, and again, this is a draft, so I'm hoping you'll take this as input, is when
parent education.
Excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. One of the other things was that it seemed throughout this that every time we talked about art, we equated it to music. And if I can't remember his first name, but Gardner had, what, 8 modalities of learning. And I'm hoping that we haven't come to the point within the STEAM program or within this LCAP that art is always related to music. And I would throw that out, and we talk about creating a lot more innovative programs for Spanish speakers, which I don't disagree with at all. The closing this achievement gap has just got to be done, but I think there may be others that we need to identify where we need some innovative programs, both at highly proficient and other subgroups. So I don't know if there's room in there to push the right button to get money in those areas. And I come back to report cards. And I will leave it at that. I've got some others that I would like to talk to you about, Amy, that are smaller. And I appreciate your time. Thank you. This was incredibly fun. I'm sorry, this is going to sound silly. It's an incredibly fun document to read.
Because through the budget process, the allocations that are made for these things would end up being in our regular line budget, so we would see salaries, benefits, materials. So just so you know that that's the part of the process.
Right, and where you can expect to see that is in our LEA plan addendum, where we itemize every single item, every single conference, every single PD, every single sub day, and we put it all out. This, they didn't give us room to put all of that in there, and it wouldn't have been appropriate for the LCAP. So we put the big ticket items.
Okay, and then I understand funding source general, but supplemental, is that, what is supplemental?
So LCFF, there's three basic categories. So there's a base fund amount that goes to all students. Every student, there's a base fund amount.
But we're not getting that.
We are not.
Okay.
So. However, we do as a district can calculate what we would get in LCFF. So that's something I will be sharing with the board at our budget discussion on May 20th of, you know, we want to ensure that what we're spending on this LCAP kind of corresponds to, if we had those funds, are we spending those same amounts?
Okay.
And so looking at that, supplemental funds are meant for three categories of students: English learners, low socioeconomically disadvantaged students, as well as foster homeless youth. So again, I think, and Rick kind of highlighted a little bit, this represents about $6 million of our $78 million budget. So this is, again, we have that $72 million maintenance of effort, all the things that we do and we continue to do. This is kind of those extra, what we pulled out of the strategic initiatives to apply kind of to the new LCAP formula.
So in a sense, the supplemental and the way you're describing it would mm-hmm. be a way for us to establish budgeting priorities when we start our budgeting plan, because there's
absolutely,
it's the same money. It's just,
yeah.
And I don't fault that approach. I think it makes sense. And so while I have you, mm-hmm. of the 1.5% projected property tax increase mm-hmm. that we're counting on, how much of that will be eaten up by step and column for credentialed and classified employees?
$900,000.
Okay. And then, I mean, when I first looked at this document, I thought the same amount year after year, which shows up as me. I think our district needs to come to consensus about what counseling means to the district and what level of counseling and intervention we want to provide for students. Because I'm hearing a lot of expectations from teachers and those of you in the trenches. And is that realistic, given our funding and our resources? Do we need to re-examine some of our priorities to see whether or not we need to be responding to that? I don't think, I felt like in listening to the speakers, and especially, you know, it's not always fun sitting up here, you know, but you're the folks who know the most about it. And for me, it's very unsettling to hear what you're saying to us. And I think we need to, as a district and as a board, we need to get our heads around what is appropriate counseling support at our sites. And then we figure out the money. So, anyway, thank you. I look forward to further work and discussion on this document.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. Mr. Unger, did you want to say something more?
No, I'm sorry.
Well, I'll wade in a little bit on this. I want to thank everyone for their input. I want to thank Amy and Mrs. McGrath and Diane and Chris and everyone, Kristen, who's worked on this, Mr. Robinette, for your introduction. As far as the counseling issue is concerned, it's certainly something that does concern me. I've certainly heard a lot about it. I've sought out input from elementary counselors and secondary counselors. Much of what I heard tonight convinces me that counseling support is extremely important. I've always felt that. But also, it's a community issue. Public schools weren't designed to solve all our socioeconomic problems. And I don't feel, I mean, I feel a little bit uncomfortable saying that to you, because I know that you as teachers know that. And I know that we are facing issues today that maybe we didn't face 10 years ago, or I didn't face even as little as 4 years ago. But I also want to apply sites and from different teachers. Some of them view them as an absolutely valuable resources, and others would rather have more counseling time. And I did say TOSAs, didn't I, or did I say coaches? TOSAs. I meant, okay, instructional coaches. How's that? Okay, not just TOSAs, but instructional coaches. Sorry, I want to make the distinction there. Well, TOSAs have been questioned over the years, too. And I see a smile back there from a few people. But I do appreciate that. I appreciate the perspective from the site level, and I also appreciate the perspective I get from teachers. Again, this is a question, as my economics professor would say, of scarcity. There's never enough to meet everybody's wishes and needs and demands. And it's incumbent upon us to listen to the folks, and I do think that a lot of this that it was presented tonight is an attempt to address the issues that were brought up in the various LCAP forums that have been with the community, with the teachers, and so forth. So I want to applaud the attempt, and I think it's a difficult decision for us to make, but I think there's going to have to be trade-offs, and we will have to, Mr. Millar, yes, decide on what our priorities are. So, thank you. Is there any further discussion? Yeah, Marilyn.
There's just me, and I don't have a lot. This is a kind of a cumbersome document, and I spent about 3 hours with it, and I'm going to have to spend a lot more time with it to really understand what is going on. I appreciate the work, because for the 3 hours that I spent reading it, people, I'm sure, put 300 hours into creating it. So I'm appreciative, and it does address a lot of things. I'm not really ready to report on it yet, or formulate my decisions about it. I am stuck on this counseling issue that has been brought forward a couple of times. No one has been a greater advocate for counseling than I have been over the last 12 years. I have been really a pain about counseling. And we're going to be reaching out to outside agencies, and there would be various other kinds of resources available. I was expecting something very different. I thought I had made it clear that what I wanted to hear was, without acronyms, what happens when a child has need or a family has need? Who refers them? Where do they go? What kind of supports do they get? Very specific, very down to earth, very easy to understand. I have a child in my class that has emotional problems. That child comes from a family that has very limited financial resources. And perhaps that child speaks English as a second language. What kinds of supports are in place for that child and their family, and how do they get to those? And if they don't have a car, how do they get to those? And that's not the kind of information that I received tonight, but would very much like to receive in the future. I agree with Mr. Quesenberry. We are going to have to make some decisions about our financial allocations. But I also agree with the teachers who have come forward on numerous occasions and said, I can't teach a child who is not ready and able to learn because they're suffering. So I'd like more information, please, from our administration. And then I anticipate there'll be more board discussion about what, if anything, we can do to supplement the counseling that we currently have in place.
Okay, Thank you. I think we have another time to visit this. A second reading will be held at our next board meeting in 2 weeks. So we're going to move on to the... Yes, there's a question. Yes.
I was waiting for you to move on.
And you know what? There's been a request to take a five-minute break.
Okay. Terrific.
Okay.
I'll be waiting for you.
And we'll do that right now. We are at item 9.02, approval of instructional materials adoption.
Good evening again. I'm pleased to bring to you a recommendation to adopt a K-2 Common Core aligned math program tonight. As you are aware, our K-2 teachers have participated in 3 years of ongoing professional development to prepare for the shifts in pedagogy and rigor of the Common Core state standards in mathematics. For the past year, we've also been searching for the best possible program to support our teachers in the classroom. Last August, we began a pilot of the Bridges Second Edition program in 20 of our kindergarten through second grade classrooms. We chose Bridges for a year-long pilot because of its alignment with best practices and its use of visual models. This past winter, we developed what's called the Instructional Materials Adoption Panel, or IMAP. This group was made up of 17 members, including 10 classroom teachers from kindergarten, first, and second grade. The panel had representation from all elementary sites, as well as special education and English language development. We brought publishers to our district to share their programs, and we also attended the county-sponsored publishers' fair. We began a second pilot, the Houghton Mifflin Math Expressions program, in early March. The IMAP developed a rating scale used by teachers and parents to provide feedback for each program. They reviewed the feedback as well as the detailed reviews from the 20 pilot teachers. At our April 10th meeting, they unanimously recommended the Bridges Second Edition program for adoption in our K, first, and second grade classrooms. In addition, the team provided rationale for the recommendation as well as input for a professional development plan. It's interesting and important to note that Bridges is not on the state adopted list for instructional materials. It is thanks to a new ed code added in 2013 that I listed at the top of your agenda item that we are now able to consider non-state adopted materials. In order to do this, the materials must meet the required 6 criteria and the adoption panel must have a majority of classroom teachers. The 6 criteria are described in great detail in your item, so I will not go over them with you now. I'm confident the Bridges Second Edition will be a wonderful support for our kindergarten through second grade teachers in providing a student-centered, rigorous Common Core aligned math program. And before we begin discussion, I would like to thank Diana Jones, our elementary math TOSA, for coordinating the Bridges pilot effort. She's with us here tonight.
I just want to say that I visited a classroom and the teacher was using the Bridges program, and I know it's just an N of one, but she said she loved it, the kids loved it, and she really encouraged us to go forward with it. Great. So I don't know if anybody else has anything to say about it, but I'd make a motion to adopt it.
Okay. We have Mr. Buckman. Did you want to say something? I think I see your phone, your microphone lit.
Well, as long as we have a motion, I'll second it. As long as we have further discussion.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. We have a motion for adoption by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Buckman, and we can have further discussion. So we'll go to Mr. Buckman and then Mrs. Schaffer.
Thank you. I guess the first question I have is: Has this? I don't remember this. Has the state said that they're going to start helping us with textbook adoptions again? Are we back in a cycle, or are we putting this out of our own pocket?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you mean by help. Financial help?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay.
There used to be a fair amount of funding.
Right. I'm not aware of any dollars that they'd offered to us at this point for that. We've been, I think it's fair to say, saving for the last few years because we've not been adopting textbooks.
Okay. So we're in our reserve, to answer your question, Mr.
Please.
Buckman. We still have our textbook allocation funds, instructional material realignment funds. that we have saved that will be used for this purpose, but there are no new textbook funds currently that we'll be receiving.
So basically, we're going to put ourselves out of our budget to help our kids to be in a better place, and I think that's a great way to spend money, and I appreciate it. The textbook adoption, I understand that a lot of work went in the IMAP group. Was there an opportunity for parental review?
Thank you for asking that question. Yes, there was. It was put in all of our school site newsletters. The books were on display at all 9 of our sites. The books are currently on display up at Instructional Services, and a second round of information went out to our parents through our newsletters.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mrs. Schaffer.
If we adopt this, if we vote to adopt this tonight, how quickly will teachers have the texts and any ancillary materials and the opportunity to be adequately trained by
fall? Back before the end of June. So we might not have it by the last day of school, but we would have it before June is out. So teachers that want to come back and pick up the materials, take a look at them, you know, study them over the summer, they would be free to do that. We have 2 days of professional development tentatively scheduled before school starts to get our teachers up and going. It's a complicated program, takes a lot of teacher brains on, time on, and we want to provide the bulk of that before school starts.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Okay. All in favor of the motion to adopt these materials?
Okay.
Aye. Aye. Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? The motion passes 6-0 with Dr. Eisenrath Roger absent.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We are now at the approval of instructional materials and recommendation for high school courses.
Yes, tonight I would appreciate your approval of instructional materials recommended for 4 different high school courses. New instructional materials are needed for these courses. The current AP Statistics textbook, which is over 15 years old, is outdated and the books are in poor condition. Therefore, we'd like to order new textbooks for both high schools. As well, the Advanced Placement College Board recently split the AP Physics B course into 2 1-year courses, AP Physics 1 and AP Physics 2, which resulted in a new curriculum framework. In February, the board approved the new AP Physics 1 course, so now we're requesting the purchase of the required textbook for both of our comprehensive high schools. The board also approved AP Physics C Mechanics, as well as Biotechnology, to be offered at Morro Bay, so therefore it has a required of new textbooks. District teachers have reviewed and evaluated the materials related to these courses. The recommendations were presented in the executive summary presented earlier. It gives a brief description of the courses and the projected materials. Textbooks being recommended for the AP courses are also approved on the AP website, and instructional materials include some student textbooks and teacher resources. The statistics textbooks and physics textbooks, I wanted to note, were available in an electronic version. However, after considering this with staff, it was decided that the current infrastructure of our high school is just not prepared to be able to have e-textbooks and to be able to handle that. So it just doesn't lend itself to being there yet. All in
general fund and a commitment again to our students and staff? No. So, this is coming out of the reserve? Again?
It's coming out of our instructional material realignment.
Thank you.
Reserve,
I'm sorry.
Yes. Which actually is general fund now.
You know, smoke and mirrors, it's all money. So my question is, as I look at this, 1, 2, 3, 4 AP classes and 1 higher biotechnology class, and I think it's great that we're going to make this investment. My question is that we have textbooks for, I'm going to call it regular math, people like me that didn't take AP math, and, you know, I understand the logic in replacing books, but I'm wondering if, I don't know, somehow we could get information maybe through the Friday memo on what are, you know, where do we stand with other textbooks in the district, because as I understand it, it's been years since we've adopted anything. These are, what, 1999 in replacements? And so I love the fact that they're going at AP, but I think if we've got any money left, maybe we can find some other places.
Yeah, we'd be happy to update you on that, and Friday notes probably would be appropriate because there's a lot of things, you're right, that we need to update. There's also a lot of things that are not available at the level that we need them to be right now. Unfortunately, there's a lot of textbooks that are old standards that they've put a new cover on and calling them Common Core, and we only want high-quality material. So, but we'd be happy to update you on that.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. With regard to the biotechnology course at Morrowbie High School, I think we had some discussion about that, you and I. The 80 student books would be continue to be available. Those are not consumables. But the student workbooks are consumables. Am I right?
Let me look at that one.
Or was it the test kits and the other things that were consumables?
I think you're right. I think they said that a class set could be reused, but it's the other items that were consumable that was a higher cost than what we were expecting that the teacher put together. And so we decided, met with the group, and came to a resolution with the site principals as well as the teacher to say that we would do the one-time setup cost and get the class.
We demonstrated interest, I think, in it. If no one else has any comments, I'll move approval.
I'll second it. And I do have just a brief comment that Mrs. Roger stole my thunder on that a little bit, but that's quite all right. I know one teacher, Morrowbie High, will be very happy with this, and I'm so glad that you've worked with him and realizing, I think, a dream and a course, I think, that will be very, very valuable to students in their future. So thank you for that. Is there any further questions or comments? So we have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Quessenberry. All in favor of the adoption of textbooks for the following classes, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0 with one absence. Thank you. Mr. Robinette, are you addressing both 9.4, point 9.04 and 9.05?
If you'd like me to, I'm happy to.
Okay, thank you.
As the designated board policy wordsmith, I will attempt a couple of these. Thanks to Mr. Buckman, he actually noticed a outdated board policy and brought it to our attention at the last board meeting, where we have a district goals, you know, goals of the board, basically, that are within our policy, and the ones that are listed were from 2000 to 2005, so a few years past. Our recommendation is actually just to cross those statements out and say something, and here's the wording, in recognition of the fluid nature of board goals. They will be published on the district's website and updated as necessary as a way of just covering the policy. But any other language that you might suggest would be fine also.
And if we adopt this, Mr. Robinette, I can go to the website within...
It's there now. It's we have there. It on our... our we have our... not only our strategic initiatives, but we have those six board goals that are listed there that you established last summer's retreat. So this way we don't have to come and repeat this policy year after year.
Is there any public comment? Okay. I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor of this change in board policy, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0 with one with Dr. Eisendrath Rogers absent.
This next board policy also we're recommending a very small change. This was actually suggested by our legal counsel when we were reviewing this. This is the pre-retirement part-time employment policy. Sometimes it has to do with education code 44922, sometimes referred to as the Willie Brown Act. This has to do with teachers' ability to have pre-retirement part-time work options. Our legal counsel has suggested that we take out the one phrase that says receive service credit, because it indicates that the superintendent or designee establishes rules that gets employees to receive service credit. Well, we have no control over the reception of service credit. Only STRS does. So really, to promise something that will happen, it happens, but we have no control over the reception of service credit is something we probably shouldn't promise. We have pretty extensive ARs, which we're not bringing for your review, but this is something that in reviewing this policy we were suggested take that language out because it makes a promise you have no control over. And this is the first reading unless you'd like to adopt it tonight.
Is there any public comment on this board policy change? Seeing none, Mr. Buckman, you have your light on.
Yeah,
this makes perfect sense to me. As employees were to look at this, my concern is they might walk away with it saying, "Oh, I can't get service credit," and in fact they can. So, is there something, possibly in the AR that says, "Please check with your bargaining unit"?
Yeah, the AR is probably what we refer the most to when teachers ask about the Willie Brown Act. That's what we send them, because it actually outlines all the rules and regulations. Those that the board has instructed, which is the number of years that we would do this for, as well as the requirements to be age 55, to have worked 10 years in the district. There's several requirements, and part of it is the whole reporting to STRS, which we do and the employee must do also jointly. So it's all kind of laid out in there.
And this has no effect on contract language?
No, this is a board policy. Exactly. So we do.
And a second by Mr. Unger. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0 with one absence. We are now at the action consent agenda. And as I read these items, if you wish to pull one, let me know. Item 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, okay, there's a poll. 10.03, acceptance of donations. 10.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.05, approval of purchase orders. And 10.06, approval of warrants and payroll. Okay. So I need a motion for the approval of items 10.01, 3, 0.3, 0.4, 0.5, and 0.6. Mrs. Sheffer.
I will so move approval of 10.01, 03, 04, 05, and 06.
And I will second that. Is there any discussion? Is there any public comment? You see no public comment, no further discussion. All in favor of the items as enumerated by Mrs. Sheffer?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Items 10.01, 0.03, 4, and 5 and 6 are passed 6-0 with one absence. Okay. Action on consent items polled. Mr. Buckman.
Yes, thank you. As I look at this, I see that we're, maybe I can't see it. We're surplusing a 1989 F-150 with 145,000 miles and another truck with 175,000 miles. For $100, I'm probably going to go buy both of them. And maybe I can get one good truck. However, if these are part of the cycle where we're going to be replacing vehicles, I'm going to just urge that we look at fuel efficiency and maintenance costs, but mostly fuel efficiency. Given the opportunity to replace, I think it would just be a great way for
the importance of having things like a furniture fund or a car, you know, vehicle replacement fund, those types of things. So we definitely, as we're developing the budget right now, are taking those things into consideration because, again, I've asked principals for needs. There's so many needs. Anthony, I've tasked him with really getting rid of surplus items. You know, what are the needs out there? Let's be more efficient. Let's look at green vehicles, those types of things. So it's definitely something that's on our radar.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to approve item 10.02.
I'll second that. A motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor of the approval of item 10.02? Indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 6-0 with one absence. I believe we are now on the advanced agenda. Is there anything for the advanced agenda? I think we got it. I think we got a Friday report coming or something. Is that correct? Yes. If there's time. Okay. And now we are to informational and the board reports by board members. Mr. Millar whispered in my ear, so he's going to go first, and then you, Mr. Unger,
and then you, Mrs. Roger.
And then you, Mrs. Roger, and Mr. Buckman.
Very gratified by the turnout of the board for the
Pacific West accreditation team. Welcome. And then I was not able to attend the Tea and Poetry at Laguna Middle School, but I do very much appreciate them giving us a copy, and I look forward to reading the poetry. There's one I've already seen that it was a dose of vitamin C, SEA.
So,
anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to go to the boardwalk at Hawthorne, and Mr. Collins took me around. It was great. I really had a good time and got to see some classes just doing some great stuff and some teachers doing some great teaching. I came to the open house here at Los Osos Middle School, and tons of people. This place was full. There were two shifts, one for the fifth grade parents coming in, and then the sixth, seventh, and eighth graders, and for $100 of property tax value and put it into a fund for kids that they use for things like after-school programs, school busing, you know, just enrichment and things like that. It was really interesting. Of course, that's San Francisco, and it took them a while. $0.02 per $100 is nothing. So I just thought that was good. And then last Thursday, I went to Mr. Rapucci's balloon science experiment, and it was great. I could only stay for one of them, but they launched this gigantic weather balloon, and they had the students had a large styrofoam glider attached to it with a sort of a propeller that as they sent the balloon up 300 feet, they dropped the glider. The propeller generated electricity, and as it was generating electricity, they had a camera on the glider that was taking pictures of it and showing how much electricity it was generating. It was great. Mr. Greer, who was here, Mr. Greer's class came and watched it happen, and there were some of the kids from one of the special day classes that were there, and Mr. Rapucci just does a great job. And they, I think they took first at the Balloon Fest in the next day, or Saturday, up at Tobin James Winery. So congratulations to Mr. Rapucci and the guys at Morro Bay High School.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. Mrs. Roger, are you?
Well, I had my light on because I wanted to comment on the WASC visit at Pacific Beach, but Mr. Millar already.
I'm very succinct. You should elaborate.
Okay. Well, we went not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before, was it, to Pacific Beach High School, where the WASC team was there beginning their week-long assessment that they do to see if they're going to recertify Pacific Beach, which of course they will, but if they'll give them the maximum six-year platinum certification. And all seven board members showed up for a little sort of a, it was like a little meet and greet kind of to, for us to meet the accreditation team. And I was so astounded just on the strength we're all there and that our administrators were all there. I should say not all there, but Dr. Prater was there, Mr. Robinette was there, and several other people. Mr. Pinkerton was not there, and I'll be discussing that with him later.
I was at the FICMAT Academy all weekend, Ms. Rogers,
okay.
That you sent me to.
It's that old FICMAT excuse again. Well, anyway, it was wonderful, and I was so proud of PB, and I'm anxious to hear what the sense was from the evaluating team.
Well, we attend. If I can just report quickly, we will get a much more detailed report, but we attended the exit report on Wednesday, a week ago Wednesday, and had some very good insights for the school. We don't have the WASC report in hand, but the early indicators are that they will receive a six-year accreditation. So that's what we're expecting to get.
Mr. Buckman.
Well, let's see. Okay, I was at Pack Beach, and it was quite wonderful. I also did get to go to the C.L. Smith auction, which I have attended in the past, but this time I left early because there was not much left in my wallet, and it was an excellent event, and I have to blame Amy for probably starting it. No? Okay. Well, anyway, I had to leave early because there were so many good items, and I would have been in a lot of trouble.
Is there any further board reports or comments from staff? Seeing none, we are adjourned until May 20th, although the board will meet with Dr. Prater on May 13th at 5 p.m. Thank you for all coming.